This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. History may remember 2020 for many things, but the impeachment proceedings playing out in the U.S. Senate are part of an ongoing conversation about the American experiment and how its three-legged structure of government can survive. Professor Barbara McQuaid is a former U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Michigan, now with the University of Michigan's Law School. She published an essay arguing for this as an important moment in questions of executive power. Barbara McQuaid, welcome back to Stateside.
Thanks, April. Glad to be here.
You point out that one of the main outstanding questions in the extent of executive is the extent of executive privilege. Don McGahn, former White House counsel to the president, has declined to obey a subpoena in the House impeachment proceedings and appealed the judge's order to comply. What could the resolution of his case tell us?
Yeah, April, you know, you used an interesting phrase there when you said that our government is a three-legged stool. I sometimes refer to it as a game of rock, paper, scissors. You know, each one is equally powerful and can serve as a check on the other. And with regard to executive privilege, that is a way for the executive branch to say to Congress, we're going to stop your oversight ability by playing this card, by using executive privilege. And it is a recognized doctrine. It plays an important role. It allows a president to say, I want to encourage frank and candid conversations with my highest level aides without the chilling effect that might exist if they knew that their conversations could one day become public. And that has value, and we want to protect that. But in the past, in the case of United States versus Nixon, the Supreme Court said this is not spelled out in the Constitution. It's kind of a court-made construct, but it does have value. We recognize it, but it has some limitations. What President Trump has done with regard to Don McGahn and others is to say, not only do I have executive privilege, but I have something called absolute immunity. And that means that my close aides don't even have to show up when Congress serves them with a subpoena. And so he has taken executive privilege and really ramped it up a notch. That challenge, that Congress has challenged that. Some committees have brought legal suits challenging that assertion of executive privilege. And in particular, this case involving Don McGahn, a district court judge has decided that there is no such thing as absolute immunity. You have to show up and at least answer questions subject to a question-by-question basis before you can assert executive privilege. And I think we're going to see in the coming months in the courts of appeals and maybe at the Supreme Court what the contours of that may be. So through this litigation, I think we're going to get some answers to some questions about the limits of executive privilege.
If the president's attorneys try to press the issue that the political question is not in force here and that the judiciary needs to settle the limits of presidential power, I mean, is that something that would have to be discussed in federal court?
Yes. I mean, I think what it would take is actually filing a lawsuit by somebody, whether it is a committee seeking to compel compliance with a subpoena, or if there was a compulsion order issued by Chief Justice Roberts in the impeachment, perhaps a lawsuit brought by President Trump to quash that subpoena and to resist the subpoena, I think that would go to the courts for resolution. And what's interesting is if the courts decided they did not want to get into it, for example, there has been a judge in the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals in one of the subpoena matters who has said when a subpoena relates to impeachment, it is a political question that courts cannot decide. Judge Rao in the D.C. Circuit has said that. It was a dissenting opinion. She did not have the majority there. But there does seem to be uncertainty as to whether a court would be willing to decide. Now, if the parties themselves cannot work it out and it's come to that, I don't know that the courts have much choice, because otherwise we are left at a stalemate. And I don't know if that's a satisfactory outcome. Stalemate means that the party who is the non-moving party, I guess, just prevails by default.
The president's defense team argues that there is no criminal conduct here and that voters are the best arbiters of whether the president's use of power is in the end appropriate. Let's say the Senate votes to acquit and the president wins a second term in November. Is there anything else that other branches of government could do at that point?
I guess there's always the impeachment power to start over and remove him from office. But I think as a political matter, if the president is not removed from office in this impeachment and then is reelected, it would seem politically difficult to go through another impeachment. I suppose that I would think that Congress will have been weakened if that is the case, because the House did impeach President Trump. And then if the voters were to say, sort of reaffirm his behavior by reelecting him as president, I think what they are saying essentially is that we do not think that the conduct for which he was impeached is sufficient to remove someone from office. I think that sends a message to future presidents that they can engage in similar behavior. You know, one of the reasons prosecutors prosecute criminal cases is to deter that kind of behavior from others in the future. And if President Trump is successful in avoiding removal from office and is successful in being reelected, then I think they have failed in that deterrent effect. And I think that a message has been sent that presidents can get away with this kind of behavior and voters don't care.
Well, is there any reason that the voters should not be the jury? There is an ocean of information available online about what happened during the call to Ukraine. What's wrong with letting the process play out in that manner?
Well, the framers of the Constitution thought otherwise. They thought that removal from office should be done by the House through impeachment and the Senate through removal, rather than waiting for the next election to come around. Certainly, voters have the ability to do that and is to serve as a check even on Congress. But I think one of the arguments that the House managers have made is we can't wait until the next election because President Trump poses a clear and present danger to election security. It is the election itself that is the very subject of the impeachment articles, because President Trump is seeking to undermine the results of that election. And we can't be confident in the results of that election if President Trump is permitted to behave that the way that he has. And so there's been this argument that impeachment would effectively be undoing the past election and tearing up the ballots. But under that theory, then no president should ever be impeached. And that's certainly not what the framers of the Constitution intended.
You note in your article that there's really a hybrid of legal and political procedures in play here for which we're off the map. There's no playbook. What are we to make of this? How is it that we've found ourselves in this place where there is no set of guidance for what is going on?
I think we find ourselves here because President Trump is such a buster of norms. He's a disruptor. He has behaved very differently from other presidents in the past. I think, as we discussed earlier, whereas most members of the executive branch in prior administrations have been willing to participate in the negotiation and accommodation process, for example, President Trump says, I will fight all the subpoenas. He's a fighter. He's a counterpuncher. He's a disruptor. And so I think that failure to follow norms means that if it is not written into the law, we can't count on him to go along with the status quo or the way things have done in the past. I think it will cause us to reexamine some of the ways that we do things in government. Do we need to enshrine into law some of the things that were always just our assumptions and make them laws? But, you know, at the end of the day, it's sort of when I was U.S. attorney, one of the things that was often said is the way to avoid personnel problems and management problems is to hire good people. And I think that voters would be wise to take that advice, that the way to avoid problems in management of our government is to elect good presidents. And if you have a disruptor, it's not all bad. The presidency has evolved in prior generations by people who have thought and acted outside the box. And change certainly is sometimes a very good thing. But when you have people willing to flout the law and to disrespect co-equal branches of government, I do think that voters should think twice about whether that's the kind of person who is wielding power responsibly.